Welcome to the Golden Age of Comic Books. It is July 24th, 2005. Welcome everybody to the show. This is Bill Jourdain, your host, and we are very glad you're here. Today we're going to talk about the San Diego Comic-Con International just a little bit, some of the things we saw and heard there. Then we're going to talk about Golden Age supervillains, and in particular today we're going to talk about the Golden Age Catwoman, and then we're going to talk about the Golden Age Two-Face. Then we'll conclude the show today with an interview we did with Ben Samuels of Heritage Comics Auction about an absolutely wonderful and rare piece of original comic book art from the Golden Age of comics. Well, the San Diego Comic-Con International was everything that I thought it would be and everything that I hoped it would be. What a fabulous show. Lots of wonderful Golden Age books to see. I was blown away by the Metropolis Comics booth where they had 8 copies of Batman #1. Unfortunately, I didn't pick one up for myself, but it was great to see that many copies of such a wonderful Golden Age book. And not only did they have a bunch of copies of Batman #1, but they had a lot of fabulous Golden Age books and very high grade. And they weren't the only dealers there that had those kinds of wonderful Golden Age books. There were numerous dealers there that had all kinds of special high-grade Golden Age books, and it was just a delight and a pleasure for me to be there to see all of that wonderful Golden Age comic book history on display. I had a great time meeting some folks at the Heritage Comics Auction booth, and we'll talk about that and have an interview with Ben Samuels of Heritage later on in the podcast. They were there with some fabulous original artwork, as well as some extremely high-grade, including some mile-high copies of some Golden Age comic books. I spent a little time with Pete Bickford of the Human Computing Company, and they published the Comic Base program. Comic Base has a brand new version out, version 10.02. This is a program that allows dealers and collectors to catalog and manage their comic book database. I've been using Comic Base for a number of years. I think it's a wonderful program. I've used it to catalog and price all of my books over the years, and I would highly recommend it. You can go to their website at comicbase.com and download a demo version of the program. It's a very large program. It has literally thousands and thousands of comic titles in it. It has pricing information from the Comic Book Buyer's Guide. It is now updated monthly online. For the price of the program, you get free monthly updates for a year. It also has just an incredible array of comic book images, not just Golden Age, but all versions of comic books from the golden to the silver to the bronze to the modern age of comics. So if you're interested in a computer program in a Windows format that will allow you to catalog your comic books, to get an idea of the value of your comic books, I would highly recommend that you go to the Comic Base website, comicbase.com, and take a look at the program. I don't think you'll be disappointed at all. Now, in San Diego, as you could expect, there were huge crowds. We saw, I think, over 100,000 people there on Saturday alone, and it was elbow room only, I will tell you that much. But it was a great experience, and again, saw some fantastic books and a lot of great Golden Age fans there, as well as fans of comics generally. So, if you ever get a chance to head out to Comic-Con International, I would certainly recommend that you do so. It was the highlight of my comic convention year and probably one of the highlights of my comic collecting over the last number of years. I picked up some nice books and some that I hope we'll talk about in some of our podcasts coming up in the near future. Well, let's spend a little bit of time today talking about some Golden Age supervillains. We've talked about superheroes, but let's focus on a couple of the supervillains today. We'll talk about a couple from Batman. As you know, Batman is one of my focuses in collecting Golden Age comics, and so I thought it was natural for me to start talking about some of the supervillains that Batman has faced over the years, and in particular in the Golden Age of comics. We're going to talk about two of them today, Catwoman and Two-Face. So let's start with Catwoman. Catwoman has made 18 Golden Age story appearances in issues of Batman comics and Detective Comics. Catwoman, as I've mentioned in previous shows, was first introduced in Batman #1, along with the Joker, as two of the early villains faced by the Batman. Now, obviously, if you've read any of the early Catwoman stories, you know that Catwoman was not just a supervillain and someone who Batman was tracking down in order to put in jail for her crimes, but she was also a love interest of Batman and always got probably a little bit more preferential treatment from Batman because of that. But she made a number of appearances, starting in Batman number 1, she appeared in number 2, number 3, and then on into future issues, number 10, 15, 22, 35, 39, 42, 45, 47, 62, 65, 69, and 84. She also appeared in issues of Detective Comics in the Golden Age, but only three of those issues, number 122, number 203, and her last Golden Age appearance was in Detective Comics number 211 in September of 1954. Now, the Catwoman, when she was introduced in Batman number 1, was not in costume. She was known as the Cat and was a cat burglar and a jewel thief in that first story. In fact, she disguised herself as an old woman in that very first story and went on to appear in costume later on. Her identity became known as Selina Kyle and developed the popular costume that she wore so often in the Golden Age with the cape that had a green tint to it and a purple colored costume. But her origin was never really quite known until she appeared in Batman number 62 in the December 1950, January 1951 issue. And in that issue, in the story that was called The Secret Life of the Catwoman, for the very first time we learned of the origin of the Catwoman and how Selina Kyle became that character. It was an interesting story, to say the least, and I'll tell you a little bit about it now, but if you don't want me to spoil the story for you, you can stop listening and fast forward. And if you want to read the story for yourself, it has been reprinted on a number of occasions in Batman number 208, the January-February 1969 issue of Batman. You can find a reprint there. In Limited Collector's Edition C45 from June-July of 1976, that was one of the Treasury size or oversized editions. In the book The Greatest Batman Stories Ever Told, Volume 2, from 1992, the story was reprinted. And finally, in 2002, in the book Batman in the 50s, The Origin of the Catwoman was reprinted. Now, if you're interested in reading not only the Catwoman's origin, but the origin of Two-Face and the origin of the Joker, then go out and get a copy of Batman in the 50s. This was a trade paperback-sized book available for $19.95 in the U.S., and it contains not only the origins of those three characters, but a number of other good Batman stories from the 1950s. So check that book out if you can find it. I'm sure it's widely available at comic shops, on Amazon, on eBay, or at various comic book conventions. Now let's get back to the origin story of Catwoman from Batman number 62. In that story, the Catwoman was in prison, and a villain who was known as Mr. X decided that he needed a partner in crime to assist him in planning and committing crimes throughout Gotham City. So he decided to break Catwoman out of jail, which he did, and she agreed to become his partner in crime because he had broken her out of prison. And she was out casing her first job when she encountered Batman and Robin. And during that encounter, a condemned building began to collapse, and the Catwoman realized that Batman wasn't aware of the collapsing building, was about to be crushed to death, and she raced to his rescue to push him out of the way of the falling debris, and was struck on the head by a brick and was rendered unconscious. Batman and Robin rushed her to the Batcave, and when she started to come out of her unconscious state, she began to talk like a stewardess, and she was telling no one in particular to fasten the seatbelt and get ready for landing. And then when she finally became fully conscious, she didn't know where she was or who she was and didn't know who Batman and Robin were right away. And when they asked her what was going on, she said, "I'm Selina Kyle, a stewardess with Speed Airlines." And so her origin was then known to have been that character, and that she had been a flight attendant with an airline. She stated that the last thing she remembered was being in a plane that was about to crash, and she fell out the door of the plane as the plane crashed. Now, she regained her complete memory after this first point in time when she was becoming conscious, and told Batman and Robin that she must have become Catwoman and turned to a life of crime with the cat-themed crimes, because her father had owned a pet store when she was young and had been someone who had taught her all about cats. And she subsequently learned that crime suited her, and so in that guise, with the amnesia that she had, she became the Catwoman and a villain and stole jewels and other items for herself. Now, during the course of the story, Batman and Robin enlisted the newly reformed Catwoman. She no longer had any desire to be in a life of crime, having regained her complete memory. They enlisted her then to help them in capturing Mr. X, the villain who had broken her out of jail. And she did assist them in that, and they did capture Mr. X. And at the end of the story, she turned over her Catwoman costume to Batman, Robin, and Commissioner Gordon, and said that she would become a police operative from that point forward. So, at the end of Batman number 62, Catwoman was reformed, she was no longer a criminal, and we had, finally, after a number of years, learned of her origin. We did not see Catwoman again until a few issues later in Batman number 65, that's the June-July 1951 issue, in a story entitled Catwoman, Empress of the Underworld. And in that story, Catwoman had stayed away from crime for a number of years and had, as her father had, began operating a pet shop specializing in cats. I guess there was no surprise there. And even though she had left behind her life of crime, there were others that knew that Selina Kyle had been the Catwoman, and they began to attempt to recruit her to assist them in criminal endeavors. And another crime boss, in order to tip the scales, to get her back into a life of crime, with his gang began to commit cat-themed crimes throughout Gotham City. Of course, Selina Kyle was not involved in those crimes, but they made it look like she was. And because of that, she donned her Catwoman costume and went out to try to infiltrate this gang so that they could be put in jail. And ultimately, she assisted Batman and Robin in capturing this crime boss and his gang and put them in jail. And at the end of the story, she returned to her pet shop and again was not involved at all in a life of crime. Now, a few issues later in Batman number 69, that's the February-March 1952 issue, in a story that was called The King of Cats, mysteriously another series of cat-themed crimes was being committed in Gotham City. Of course, everyone assumed it was Catwoman, and Batman and Robin, paying her a visit, realized that she was probably not the person committing these crimes. Ultimately, it was discovered that a new villain, who was called the Cat King, was committing these crimes, and it was later discovered by Selina Kyle that the Cat King was in fact her brother, Carl, and that he was committing these crimes in the guise of the Cat King. Later on, Batman and Robin became aware of the existence of the Cat King, and because Selina was not willing to help them put him behind bars, they assumed that they must be in love or have some other romantic interest, because they were not aware that Carl was, or the Cat King was, Selina Kyle's brother. Ultimately, this was learned, and in a twist of fate, she saved both the life of her brother and Batman, which caused her brother to leave behind the life of crime, and she was then able to go back to her pet shop and her cats. Now, of course, for a number of years now, we've had Selina Kyle and the Catwoman character involved in Batman and Robin stories, but not as a crime figure. She had really been more of a support figure assisting Batman and Robin in their cases. But then in January of 1954, in Detective Comics number 203, in the story called The Crimes of Catwoman, she returned to her life of crime. And in that story, she had been reading a series of newspaper articles that had been tracing the history of Batman and the criminals that he had been fighting. And in that story, she was very upset when the reporter had related stories of where Batman had defeated her while she had been Catwoman. And later on, certain villains came to her pet shop and gave her a hard time about that, so that finally she put her Catwoman costume back on and, out of pride or whatever the case might have been, decided that she would again enter a life of crime. And she did. And in that story, she committed a number of daring crimes with cat themes and was fully immersed once again into a life of crime as the Catwoman. At the end of that story, she disappeared and did not appear again until June of 1954 in Batman number 84. And then her very last Golden Age appearance was in Detective Comics number 211 in September of 1954. So even though we had a Catwoman who started out as a villain and a love interest, and whose origin was later revealed that she had been a victim of amnesia, and that had caused her to commit a life of crime, and then she came out of that, she again committed her life to crime and was, at the end of her Golden Age run, another criminal in the life of Batman and Robin. Now, Catwoman did not make any further Golden Age appearances until, as I said, the last one was Detective 211 in September of 1954, and she did not make any further appearances until she resurfaced in the Silver Age of comics in Superman's Girlfriend Lois Lane Comics number 70 in November of 1966. So there was a 12-year hiatus in which we did not have a Catwoman in Batman or Detective Comics. Now, of course, today Catwoman is a mainstay in the life of the Batman character, as is Selina Kyle. She has appeared in numerous comics, numerous television shows, and in numerous movies with the Batman since her early Golden Age origins that we've discussed in the podcast today. Well, let's talk about the Golden Age Two-Face. Now, Two-Face was one of the most colorful Batman-related supervillains in the Golden Age of comics, even though he only made 7 Golden Age appearances in comic books, and he made additional appearances in the Batman newspaper strip in some of the Sunday Funny sections. So let's talk about Two-Face and who he was and what his origins were. Two-Face first appeared in Detective Comics number 66 in August of 1942. The story was called The Crimes of Two-Face. And in that story, the character's name was Harvey Kent, and we'll talk about that in just a little while. Now, his origin is quite well known if you've seen the theatrical film where the Two-Face character is played by Tommy Lee Jones. You will learn a little bit about the origin of the character. But in the comic book in Detective Comics number 66, Two-Face was a popular and handsome district attorney whose name was Harvey Kent. He was trying a case against a mob boss named Boss Maroney, and Batman was testifying in the trial against Boss Maroney. During the course of the trial, Harvey Kent used a coin that had been the trademark of Boss Maroney, his lucky coin, to place Maroney at the scene of a crime, of a murder, where he had lost a coin. The coin was a two-faced silver dollar, and upon realizing that Harvey Kent was likely going to get a conviction against him with that coin, Boss Maroney pulled out a bottle of acid and threw it at Harvey Kent. It struck him in the left side of his face and on his left hand, terribly disfiguring him and creating what became the character known as Two-Face. Now, of course, Harvey Kent did not immediately become a criminal just because of this incident, but as time went by, he began to become mentally unstable, and one night, as he was pondering what to do with his now horribly disfigured face and side of his body, he was staring at the coin that he still had in his possession and realized that it was this coin that had caused him to become this horribly disfigured person. A Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde character was developing in Harvey Kent at this time. Kent grabbed the knife and scratched one side of the coin, calling it the scarred side of the coin, just like he had a scarred side of his face, and at that time decided he would let the coin determine what his life would be after that. And he flipped the coin, and it landed scarred side up, and he realized that that meant he should then engage in a life of crime, thanks to the coin, and he did. Now, all of his crime from that point became themed with the number 2, and everything he did involved doubles or pairs or the number 2. Now, in this story, the Two-Face character was developed, and he then appeared in another story in Detective Comics number 68 in October of 1942 in a story called The Man Who Led a Double Life. And this was the same Two-Face character, Harvey Kent, who appeared in this story. And then again in Detective Comics number 80 in October of 1943, Harvey Kent as Two-Face again appeared in a story called The End of Two-Face. This was now his third appearance. And in that story, The End of Two-Face, Harvey was faced with the death of his fiancée, Gilda, who he had shot accidentally while fighting Batman and Robin. And as a result of his love for Gilda, he determined that he would give up a life of crime and he would undergo plastic surgery to restore his handsome features, and he did. And at the end of the story, we also had the end of Two-Face in October of 1943. Now, that would have been the end of Two-Face for the Golden Age of comics. He would have only appeared 3 times in the Golden Age, and we probably never would have heard from him again. However, apparently the popularity of the character led to additional Two-Face stories. And in December 1948, January 1949, in Batman number 50, the story The Return of Two-Face appeared. Now, the Two-Face in this story was not Harvey Kent. As I mentioned in a previous podcast, the origin of Two-Face and the Two-Face character was kind of muddled during the Golden Age of comics. And in this story, Harvey Kent and Gilda had married and had a mansion, and he was successfully practicing law. And as so many did during this time frame in the comics, he had a butler named Wilkins. And his butler, Wilkins, decided that he wanted to engage in the nefarious criminal activities of his employer. And so in the evenings, he would drug Harvey Kent so he would sleep, and he would go out in a disguise that looked like Two-Face, and he would commit various crimes that were attributed to Two-Face. And of course, at the end of this story, Batman and Robin figured it out. Butler Wilkins was caught and put in jail, and Two-Face was once again no more, and that could have been the end of Two-Face in the Golden Age of comics. But again, his popularity prevented that, and in the December 1951, January 1952 issue of Batman number 68, Two-Face once again appeared in a story called The New Crimes of Two-Face. Now, who was Two-Face in this story? Was it Harvey Kent, or was it the butler named Wilkins? Well, it was neither. In this story, we had a gentleman named Paul Sloan who took up the mantle of Two-Face. Paul Sloan, it turns out, was an actor who had been cast to reenact the creation of Two-Face way back from Detective 66 with the Boss Maroni throwing the acid in Harvey Kent's face scenario. And during the course of filming of the television show where Paul Sloan was playing Harvey Kent, a prop man named Joe, who was very jealous of Sloan, switched the bottle of colored water that was supposed to be used as the acid thrown by Boss Maroni with real acid. And the actor who was playing Boss Maroni threw what they thought was colored water onto the face of Paul Sloan, and of course it was in fact acid, and a second Two-Face was born through, again, another acid disfiguring incident. Paul Sloan, of course, became mentally unstable and proceeded to commit a number of crimes in the guise of Two-Face. He was ultimately apprehended by Batman and Robin and convinced that he should give up his life of crime and undergo plastic surgery, as Harvey Kent had done in Detective Comics number 80. Paul Sloan did, and once again, he was cured and Two-Face was no more. And so, in the golden age of comics, we assumed that there would be no more Two-Face. Well, we were wrong. And in September of 1952, in Detective Comics number 187, the story The Double Crimes of Two-Face appeared. Well, who was Two-Face in this story? Was it Harvey Kent? Was it the butler named Wilkins? Or was it Paul Sloan? Well, it wasn't any of them. It was actually yet another individual, and his name was George Blake. Now, where did George Blake come into play? Well, again, they were going to have a show, an actual live presentation, a live show, where Harvey Kent had agreed to recreate his role in becoming Two-Face, and makeup was going to be applied to him so he would look like his former Two-Face character. Blake was involved in the show and knocked out Kent and put his own Two-Face makeup on and began committing crimes that he had pre-planned as Two-Face. Well, Batman and Robin at first thought maybe Harvey Kent was once again back as Two-Face, but they soon figured it out for a number of reasons, one of which was that Blake had put the Two-Face makeup on the right side of the face as opposed to the left side of the face. And so they captured Blake and revealed that he had made himself up to look like Two-Face, and he went to jail. And once again, Two-Face was no more in the golden age of comics. Well, was that the end of Two-Face? Of course not. We all know that Two-Face continues to this day. So when did we next get to see Two-Face? Well, in Batman number 81, in February of 1954, Two-Face Strikes Again, that was the name of the story, appeared. Well, who was Two-Face in this story? Was it Harvey Kent? Was it Butler Wilkins? Was it Paul Sloan? Or was it George Blake? Well, it wasn't any of them, except that it was Harvey, the district attorney, but somewhere along the way, his name was changed to Dent. Whether that was simply a typographical error in the creation of this story, or whether the confusion between Clark Kent as Superman and Harvey Kent as Two-Face caused somebody to say, maybe we ought to change this character's name. It's really lost to obscurity. But in any event, in Batman number 81, Harvey Dent became Two-Face once again. And in that story, which is reprinted in Batman in the 50s that I mentioned during the Catwoman segment, Harvey Dent was walking down the street and saw criminals attempting to break into a safe. He intervened and an explosion ensued, and he was injured in the explosion, causing the plastic surgery that had been done in Detective Comics number 80 to be undone, and he once again became Two-Face. It was then learned that the plastic surgery could never be performed on him again, and that he was destined to be Two-Face forever. So, from Batman number 81 in February of 1954 until the present, we have had the consistent Two-Face, known as Harvey Dent, the former district attorney, in that role. Now, that was not the only golden age of comics Two-Face, believe it or not. In the Batman Sunday newspaper sections that appeared in various Sunday newspapers around the country from June 23, 1946, until August 18, 1946, there was another Two-Face to add to the confusion that we already had. And this Two-Face started out as an actor named Harvey Apollo. And he was not the district attorney, but he was a witness in a trial against a crime boss named Lucky Sheldon. Lucky Sheldon had owned the Two-Faced coin, and during the trial, Apollo pointed out Sheldon as a murderer. Sheldon grabbed a bottle of acid and threw it in Harvey Apollo's face. And as in the case of Two-Face that appeared way back in Detective Comics number 66, this actor Harvey Apollo became Two-Face because of the horrible disfigurement to his left side of the face that the acid had caused. And he became Two-Face in the newspaper for, as I mentioned, a couple of months. And the stories were pretty much the same as the comic book stories, except the characters, as I mentioned, were not the same. If you're interested in looking at some of the Sunday funny reprints from Batman during this period of time in 1946, those were all printed in a series of books by Kitchen Sink Press. I've reprinted the first two pages that show the Two-Face origin from the June 23rd, 1946 page on the Golden Age of Batman website, goldenagebatman.com. Go to the Rogues Gallery link, click on Two-Face, and then there's another link to the Sunday newspaper strip of the origin of Harvey Apollo as Two-Face. Now, back to the comic books of the Golden Age and Batman number 81 in February of 1954, when did we next see Two-Face? Obviously, Two-Face is now a regular character in the Batman comics and in the Batman movies that we've seen. Well, Two-Face disappeared from the Batman mythos until Batman number 234 in September of 1971 in a great story drawn by Neil Adams. And you've probably seen it. If you haven't, I would suggest you go get it and read it. It's really a great story and a great rendering of Two-Face. And of course, he was regular as a character after Batman number 234. So hopefully you've enjoyed learning a little bit about the Golden Age Catwoman and the Golden Age Two-Face. Hopefully in some of our upcoming podcasts, we'll talk a little bit about some other Golden Age villains from the Batman and Detective Comics. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, while I was out at the San Diego Comic-Con International, I was able to spend a little bit of time at the Heritage Comics Auction booth, and in particular with Ben Samuels of Heritage Comics Auction. And he had there on display several pieces of original Golden Age artwork that were simply fabulous and one of a kind. He had with him some covers from some Golden Age comics, one of which is ultra rare, that we'll talk about in an interview with Ben that will be coming up here in just a second. But let me say that I've never had the opportunity or the pleasure to hold a piece of original Golden Age artwork like I did at the San Diego Comic-Con International. And if you go to our blog page, you'll see a picture there of me holding the cover that we'll be talking about here in the interview in just a few minutes. But it really was a wonderful thing to see, and Ben was very kind to take the time out of his busy schedule at the show to allow me to look at this artwork and to talk about Golden Age comics with him. He was extremely knowledgeable, as are the other folks at Heritage Comics Auction, and they have an auction coming up in August that he'll talk about here in just a second that I would encourage everyone to take a look at by going to their website at heritagecomics.com. So without anything further ado, here is the interview with Ben Samuels of Heritage Comics Auction.
All right, it is July 17th, and we're at the San Diego Comic-Con with Ben Samuels of Heritage Comics Auctions. Ben, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm pleased to be here.
All right, well, Ben, I'm standing at your booth, and y'all have some fabulous Golden Age books on display and some fabulous Golden Age original covers on display. Tell us a little bit about some of the books you have that will be on your upcoming auction.
Oh, sure. We've got some really nice high-grade Golden Age comic books, some real key issues. We've got All-Star Number 1, Mile High. It's graded 9.6 by CGC. It's just tremendous book with fantastic eye appeal. We've also got a copy of Amazing Spider-Man Number 1, CGC graded 9.6. Tremendous books in grades that normally just never really come to market. But we're pleased to be able to offer them in our upcoming auction. It'll be August 11th through 13th in our Dallas offices.
Well, Ben, the All-Star number one you have, the Mile High book, is just absolutely gorgeous. I don't think I've ever seen a Golden Age comic as pretty as this one. Tell us a little bit about the Mile High collection and that pedigree.
Oh, sure. The Mile High collection was discovered by Chuck Rozanski in Denver, Colorado, hence the name Mile High. It was really the finest collection of comic books ever discovered. The original owner was named Edgar Church. He was an artist, and people speculate that he was collecting comics as a reference for his own artistic endeavors. But he bought one of virtually everything that was published and stored them in his basement in the cool, dry air of Colorado, which is perfect for the preservation of comics.
Well, Ben, these books, as I said, are just beautiful. You have a copy of All Flash Quarterly, number one, that's been graded 9.4. Now, that's not a Mile High book, but it certainly is beautiful. What's the background of that one?
Well, I can't say exactly where it came from, but while most of the truly high-grade Golden Age comics did come from the Mile High collection, there are occasionally incredible examples that do surface from other collections, and this is obviously one of those.
Sure, you have a More Fun number 53 with a really fantastic Spectre cover on it, graded CGC 9.6. Looks like that's a Rockford copy. Is that also another Pedigree?
Yes, it is. It was another Pedigree, a fantastic collection with quite a few books and extremely high grade.
All right, Ben, let me ask you about the All-Star number one, the Mile High book. Do you have an estimate what that might bring at your auction coming up in August?
At auction, you really never know what things will sell for until the hammer comes down, but we certainly believe that this could easily sell for $50,000 to maybe $60,000 or even more.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, Ben, the three items that really caught my eye that are just fabulous, you have an original cover from Action number 51, the original artwork. You have the original cover from Action number 45. And then, being a huge fan of Golden Age Batman, you have the original cover from Batman number 11, which I'm drooling over standing here, I'll tell you. Tell us a little bit about those original covers that you have and how they came into your possession for the auction.
Sure. These covers have just recently come to the market. In fact, until a few months ago, no one even really knew that they existed for sure. But the story is, basically, I myself received a call from a gentleman who's an estate dealer, and he told me that he had some original comic book art, and he started to tell me a little bit about it. He said he had the cover to Batman 11 and some early Action covers, and the first reaction is, yeah, right. But asked a few more questions, and it turned out that he really did have the real deal. They came from an estate in the northeast area of the country. There was a house of someone who was involved in the comics industry to some degree, but the artwork had apparently just been in the bottom of a box for many decades, untouched, and fortunately we were able to bring them to the market, and they, again, will be auctioned August 11th through 13th. The Batman cover is really special because it's an early Batman cover. It features Batman and Robin with the Joker. The artwork's by Fred Ray with Jerry Robinson inks, and it's really what we call a grail piece. It's like a holy grail that people search for. The Action covers are also by Fred Ray. Fred Ray penciled and inked both of the Action covers. The Action 51 cover is very nice because it features the first appearance of the Prankster. The Action 45 cover is remarkable just for the sheer quality of the artwork that actually sort of recalls the cover to Action number one, with criminals fleeing in the foreground and Superman lifting something above his head, in this case a criminal, not a car. But the pose is very reminiscent of the original first appearance of Superman in Action number one.
Well, Ben, the Batman 11 cover, again, it really caught my eye. Is that the earliest known original cover art to a Batman comic that you're aware of?
Yes, as far as we can tell, it is the earliest Batman cover to come to market. There apparently is an earlier detective cover, but to the best of our knowledge, this is the earliest Batman cover.
Well, Ben, let's talk about the values that these covers may bring at the auction. First of all, with respect to the Action number 45, what do you think about that?
Our official estimate is in the range of $25,000 to $30,000, but a piece like this, you really never know. It could certainly easily bring $40,000, maybe $50,000 on a good day.
How about the Action number 51 with that wonderful cover with the Prankster on it?
That would be similar, somewhere in the range of $25,000 to $50,000, surely.
All right, now before I get out my checkbook and my wallet to work on the Batman number 11, you better tell us what that cover may bring at the auction.
Sure, yeah. Our auction estimate on that cover is $100,000. But it's such a remarkable piece that it's really hard to know. It could certainly bring much more than that.
Well, it's really fantastic, as I said, and it's just so nice being able to see it live and in person. Tell us again, Ben, when the auction's going to be and how the listeners to the program can access your auction website.
Yeah, thank you. The best way is probably to visit heritagecomics.com, which is our website. People can register and bid online up to 24 hours before the live auction. The live auction will be held in our Dallas, Texas offices, and the dates of the auction are August 11th through 13th. I believe the original art is going to be on the last day, on the 13th, but don't hold me to that. It'd be best to check the website and be sure.
Okay, well, Ben, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule here at San Diego to talk to us about these covers, and I hope all of our listeners will go to the website and check out the original artwork that they'll have in the auction and the covers that they'll have in the auction. Ben, thank you again.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Well, that's our show for this week. We appreciate you joining us for the Golden Age of Comics podcast. Thanks again to Ben Samuels of Heritage Comics Auction for taking the time out of his schedule at the San Diego Comic-Con International to talk to us about the Golden Age of Comics they have for auction and the wonderful original covers that they had there that will be up for auction in August. If you're interested in seeing a picture of the Batman 11 cover that we talked about during the podcast, you can go to our website, goldenagecomics.org. And on the left-hand side of the page, you can click on our blog link, and that'll take you to the blog page. And there you'll see a picture of me holding that wonderful cover, just a highlight of my day to get to hold that cover, and other information about the Golden Age of Comics podcast. Always, as we mentioned, don't forget about the Grand Comic Book Database Project. You can visit their website at comics.org. Please support this very worthwhile effort to catalog the history of comic books and, in particular, the Golden Age of comics. Also, don't forget to support ACTOR, Comic Book Fund or ACTOR Fund. You can go to their website at actorcomicfund.org. And as always, please visit our website, goldenagecomics.org. Leave us some comments on the blog page about the podcast. Let us know what you'd like to hear. Let us know if you have any comments or corrections or additions to any of the information that we've talked about here on the podcast. I'm not perfect. I do make mistakes from time to time, and I certainly want to correct those mistakes. So if there are any, please let me know. I had Craig Delich, one of our listeners, point out a mistake I made in the recent podcast we did about Batman, where I indicated that his last solo story had appeared in Detective Comics number 37, when Robin had appeared in Detective Comics number 38 for the first time. In fact, the last Batman solo story appeared in Batman number 1. There were Robin stories in Batman number 1, but there was a solo Batman story in Batman number 1, so I appreciate Craig pointing out that mistake that I made on that particular podcast. As always, you can drop us an email as well at comics@goldenagecomics.org. We welcome your comments and your observations and other information that you might want to share about the Golden Age of Comics. So, thank you again for joining us. We appreciate you being here and taking the interest in the Golden Age of Comics. And we look forward to talking to you next time.